Okay. Do we have a gavel today, or?
We're first on the agenda.
Yep.
Room 112 of the State Capitol. We have several bills before us today. We'll start first with Senate File 1116, Senator Reinert, regarding the Duluth Children's Museum. Welcome, Senator Reinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My testifier is putting gloves on, which makes me nervous. I'm not sure. And you all have gloves, too. I don't. Now I'm really nervous. Mr. Chairman, I have with me Cameron Kruger and Michael Garcia from the Duluth Children's Museum, and they're going to talk a little bit about this appropriation request for STEM education activities at the Duluth Children's Museum. So, Mr. Kruger.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee. I'm Cameron Bloom Kruger. I am the president and CEO of the Duluth Children's Museum. With me is Michael Garcia, who is the retired CEO and current senior consultant for the Duluth Children's Museum. I'd like to thank Senator Reinert and Senator Soxhog and Senator Lowry for their support of this bill. Michael is going to talk about the history of the museum, and then I'm going to follow up a bit more about the request itself. So, Michael.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as Cameron indicated, my name is Michael Garcia. I live in Sawyer, Minnesota. I've been before this committee many times over the last 42 years and have just recently retired, but have stayed on with the museum through this legislative session in order to assist in this process. The gloves that Senator Reinert mentioned that are at your place, we are going to actually ask you to put on because one of the things that Cameron's going to share with you in a moment is one of the historic artifacts that is in the museum's collection that I think is particularly relevant to today's request. The Duluth Children's Museum was established in 1930. It was established by an arts educator. Mabel McKinney Wing was our founder. We were the fifth children's museum in the nation. One of the things that makes us unusual in children's museums across the nation is the fact that we have an over 35,000 historic artifact item collection. What this collection allows us to do is relate to children in the fields relating to the fields of science, technology, engineering, and math. Therefore, our request in this biennium is to assist with an additional exhibit and additional direct programming. Over the last 60 years, the museum has served a vital role in providing early childhood education. We are particularly proud of the fact that at the Children's Museum, we have a fairly equal distribution of young boys and young girls who experience the museum. We have, over the last 6 years, expanded our reach and expanded our programming into the fields of STEM. We have also relocated the museum after 36 years of tenancy in the historic Union Depot out to Lincoln Park, and we're part of the Clyde Park development at this time. Long-term goals include the fact that the museum owns a larger building across the parking lot with 25,000 square feet. We look forward to serving children in that sometime in the future. The Federal Reserve Director Olnick has talked to this body, I know, because I've been in the room while I've heard him speak about the importance of early childhood investment. I needn't talk to you about that because you, with your role as senators in this committee, fully appreciate and recognize the importance of early investment and its payoff down the road. Children 14 and under, which is the primary audience the Duluth Museum serves, represent approximately 21% of Minnesota's state population today. However, I think we all understand that they are 100% of our future. Investments in early childhood guarantee children the sense of accomplishment and the sense of possibility to dream larger and to reach higher in their goals. What I want to do now is turn it over to Cameron, who will talk to you a little bit about this current request and also about the object we brought today to demonstrate the Duluth Children's Museum unique ability to stimulate the interest of children. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia, and for your distinguished service, and we wish you the best in your retirement.
Thank you, Senator.
Chairman. The object that I have is a cuneiform tablet. It's a clay tablet. It comes from 2000 BC, we estimate. And the writing within the cuneiform tablet is a record of the day's sales of animals in Babylonia. Now, I know as educators, as historians, as individuals who are interested in the cultural and historical items that we've collected over the years, we thought that this would be a great representation of what we have in our collection. I'd ask that you wear gloves while you handle this, and if there was a page with gloves that could help me out. And while you're gloving up, see, this is great. Part of the fun of the Children's Museum is this sort of tactile, hands-on experience that you're having right now. It's a little nerve-wracking, though, to be handling a an object from 2000 BC, of course.
Don't drop it.
You're responsible for it, right?
Yeah, I am responsible.
Our request will increase.
So as you're passing the item along, I would like to note a little bit about our request. SF1116 is for a $100,000 each year of the biennium critical request for science, technology, engineering, and math, STEM programming that we provide through the Duluth Children's Museum. And an example of the type of programming that we're providing right now is actually a press release that's included in your packets that talks about the Student Spaceflight Experiment Program, where students had the opportunity to design experiments that would be sent into low Earth orbit. And the opportunity actually led to a group of three high school students who sent or are sending frog embryos into outer space and then studying how they hatch and what happens to those frogs. So a fantastic example of how STEM education can be implemented, and the Duluth Children's Museum was both the catalyst and a community partner in providing that opportunity to those high school students. With your support, the Duluth Children's Museum will serve not just the 35,000 individual visitors that come to the museum each year, but will increase our opportunities for outreach into the community, including after-school programs and classrooms, and serve an even greater audience of youth who really need this type of STEM education provided. The type of STEM education that we're providing is supplementary to classroom learning. We have the opportunity and experience as an informal learning environment to really provide the sort of hands-on experience that you're able to have right now. And that's what makes the Children's Museum unique and why we're a great community partner in providing STEM education. State support is really key in this endeavor, particularly as a cultural organization and particularly as a cultural organization in Greater Minnesota. Am I turning it back over to you? So that's our request. With that, I'm going to turn it back over to Michael for a few other thoughts here.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're actively engaged in the show and tell.
Good.
Okay. That is our goal, the active engagement of both adults and children when they visit the Children's Museum. Right. And I think we do an outstanding job of it. As we look to the future and we look to the young people that we affect, the lives of young people that come to Children's Museum are often children who are unsure of where they're going to land and what direction they have. The investment that we make in children is to spark their curiosity and their imagination. And when we think of the talent that's come out of Minnesota, and on the drive down to the Snow Belt this morning, because it was 50 and warm where we live, one of the things that I was reflecting on in my own mind was these elder statesmen like Senator Humphrey, Vice President Mondale, some of the people that Minnesota has produced and sent on in the nation. And within the fields of the creative realm, people like Trampled by Turtles. Not to be speaking to anybody specific.
Get that in here, too.
And Home Free are some of the creative ones. Composers like Eleanor Hovda, who was born in Duluth and later lived there and ran the Regional Arts Council. But these adults became adults invested in by adults like you who cared for them and cared about them. And the messages that you give by investing in young people are messages of value and worth that will pay back many times into the future. I hope you certainly get an opportunity to look at the cuneiform tablet. I hope you visit the museum when you're in Duluth. Far too much of our collection is in storage just because of the transitional facility that we're in. However, we look forward to showing you what we have and reaching more young people. We would very much like to stand for questions and welcome anything that you have.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Questions, comments from the committee? Sarah Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could have Mr. Kruger respond. When that tablet came around and they read that, it looks like you said they were selling animals that day. Looks like they sold some dinosaurs, some donkeys, and some elephants. Did I read that right?
It's amazing the level of knowledge you have of cuneiform right now. And we're big on dinosaurs at the Children's Museum, so absolutely.
Thank you, Sarah Dames.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to ask Senator Dames if he saw the original copy or not. But
I helped print it.
Very good. Was there anyone in the audience that would like to testify on Senate File 1116? Okay. Very well done. And Senator Reinhart, did you have a chance to?
I'll take it out in the hall. Okay. That way, if I drop it, it won't be in front of everybody.
Well, great. Well, it's an excellent program, and I note here that last year, people from every state in America, as well as four different countries, visited the museum. There are a lot of parts of within our own states, so we appreciate the success and wish you the best in your continued mission, and we'll be thinking of the students as well when they're participating in Cape Canaveral. That's exciting. So, Senator Stump will make a motion.
I move that Senate File 1116 be recommended to for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill.
Further discussion? None. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you very much, Senator Reinhart, and to the House parties.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, Senate File 1481, Senator Nelson. And that you bring your testifiers with you. I believe there's an A15 author's amendment in the packet. And when Senator Nelson would like us to adopt that, we will. Welcome, Senator Nelson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Great to be in front of your committee. And thank you for hearing Senate File 1481. Yes, Mr. Chair, if someone could offer the author's amendment to Senate File 1481, that should say A15.
Hey, Senator Dames offers the A15 amendment. I believe everyone should have a copy. It's an author's amendment. All in favor indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Adopted. We now have Senate File 1481 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. This is an issue that I know this committee has dealt with, and that has to do with our workforce development. I'm making sure that we have the workforce to meet our the needs of today and tomorrow's jobs. I know Senator Bonhoff has worked extensively on this, and we know that our school districts as well are trying to better advance career and technical education. And the bill before you today is a result of a problem that we found as school districts did attempt to develop more career and tech ed to better meet our workforce development needs. And before I do a quick walk through the bill, it's pretty straightforward, though. I'm going to introduce the superintendent from the Rochester Public Schools to describe for the committee career and tech education, why this bill is important. With that, Mr. Chair and committee, I'd like to introduce Superintendent Mike Munoz.
Welcome, Superintendent.
Good morning, Chair Wieger and members of the Education Finance Committee. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak with you this morning about Senate File 1481. First, I'd like to tell you that I was a classroom teacher for 12 years, and at Rochester Public Schools, our preference is to hire certified teachers, but sometimes it's difficult to find teachers with a CTE certification. There are limited post-secondary institutions that offer the CTE certification. A looming shortage of skilled workers has been top of minds of business leaders in the Rochester area and across the state of Minnesota. This is a real and serious issue that has the potential to undermine the strength of individual businesses and the broader prosperity of the state of Minnesota. Thanks. Businesses need to collaborate with educational institutions to build a pool of skilled workers. I would like to share with you a collaboration that is going on in Rochester. Due to the City of Rochester renewing a local half-cent sales tax, we will be opening a new Career and Technical Educational Center in the fall of 2016. This is a partnership with Rochester Public Schools, Rochester Community Technical College, and Winona State University. We worked with the Rochester Area Chamber of Commerce and 35 business leaders to determine the career pathways for our new center that would address the skills needed for the many jobs that are available in the Rochester area. Working with our business leaders for several months, we landed on the following career pathways: agriculture, engineering, health science, hospitality, information systems, manufacturing, and construction. This has been a coordinated effort between secondary and post-secondary educators and community partners, providing pathways to in-demand careers. We are excited about the opportunities that we will be able to provide for our students while ensuring a skilled workforce for the Rochester area. Increasing the number of Minnesotans with the education, skills, and training needed for the economy is a multi-layered strategy. Some of the steps to achieve this goal include making teaching and learning in secondary schools more rigorous, engaging, and relevant, ensuring that more students are college and career ready, increasing high school graduation rates, especially for low-performing students. While addressing these issues will require significant changes across the entire education system, increasing opportunities for students to participate in high-quality career and technical education is a comprehensive strategy that impacts all of them. Career and technical education is an educational strategy for providing young people with the academic, technical, and employability skills and knowledge that to pursue post-secondary training or higher education and enter a career field prepared for ongoing learning. Well-qualified educators are essential to providing high-quality and effective CTE programs. However, there are several barriers to ensuring these well-qualified teachers are in the classroom. First, CTE teachers must meet more stringent certification requirements than core academic teachers. In Minnesota, CTE teachers must have a CTE credential. Colleges of education rarely have a CTE training track, resulting in shortages of teacher candidates who have received training in the skills needed to teach CTE courses. Fortunately, local employers can be leveraged to strengthen teacher instruction and provide the invaluable link to industry practitioners. In an economy that requires well-trained and high-skilled professionals, career and technical education is a proven method for awarding young people with the knowledge and skills necessary to be successful members of the workforce. If we were to make good on our commitment to graduate more students from high school prepared to face post-secondary challenges, schools must continue to provide and improve CTE, ensuring that students have access to high-quality pathways to success. Using career and technical revenue for salaries paid to non-licensed community experts allows us to offer comprehensive career and technical programs and not force us to eliminate a career pathway due to our inability to find a licensed teacher with CTE certification. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much, Superintendent Munoz. So as a teacher myself, it was very important. I appreciate the adoption of the author's amendment, which makes very clear that school districts first must try to obtain licensed teachers for career and tech ed. But as Superintendent Munoz said, that has been a hard task to fulfill. And so the bill before you, 1481, is simply a tweak in the way that we define what acceptable expenditures are for career and tech ed. So basically, you'll see that it just adds that and non-licensed community experts. So when there is no licensed community tech ed teacher available for this growing and necessary workforce development initiative, non-licensed community experts who are already teaching, by the way, but their salaries are not counted as a career and tech ed expense. This simply allows those salaries of those non-licensed community experts to be considered as part of the expenses allowed to be paid for through the community and tech education levy. Members may want to know, what is a non-licensed community expert? They are approved by the Board of Teaching, and there's about 500 of them in the state already. And again, this is simply a tweak saying that those teacher salaries who are hired to teach career and tech ed should be part of the voc ed formula. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for any questions.
Okay, and Sarah Nelson, I believe Mary Gilbert wanted to testify, and as she approaches, Senator Claussen has a question.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I was scheduled to testify on the next bill.
Okay.
Okay, it's Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Superintendent Munoz, question. Do you have Project Lead the Way programs as well?
Yes, we do.
And those people require a CTE license as well. Do you have CTE licensed people teaching those?
At this time, we do. But as we expand with our new current technical center, our concern is that we won't be able to find enough teachers that have the CTE certification.
That's why I'm wondering in your bill here if you could expand that, because usually you're finding someone on your faculty who's willing to do that but doesn't have the CTE license, and I'm wondering if an expansion of the bill would cover those people as well in the future. Does that make sense at
yes.
all?
Okay.
Thank you. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Superintendent Munoz and Senator Nelson, we spent a great deal of time in education policy discussing this because Senator Dames had an amendment where we actually authorized the use of career and tech ed part-time professionals who weren't even licensed at all because as we heard some pretty compelling testimony that there really aren't even enough community experts who come forward in this category and that there's a real need. So I wonder if the superintendent could comment on that. So what was actually passed and put on the bill was an amendment that said if a community and tech ed professional was willing to teach part-time, that they did not need to be licensed because there's already that provision with regard to colleges.
Yes, I mean, that would even make it – sorry.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Yeah, that would make it even easier for us. There are times where we might not – you're correct. We might be able to find a certified teacher, so that would even enhance this bill, yes.
Thank you.
Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 1481 as amended? If not, Senator Dames moves that Senate File 1481 as amended be recommended for possible inclusion in the Senate E-12 omnibus bill. Further discussion? If not, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Adopted. Thank you, Senator Nelson, and you're up again for Senate File 1482.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the great support on this committee for career tech ed. The bill before you now, members, is Senate File 1482. And again, I'd like to thank the chair and the committee for hearing this bill. It's important to address a topic that has received much discussion at the legislature because we know how important it is. and that is teachers. We know teachers are the number one in-school variable that correlates with student achievement. And this particular bill simply makes permanent last year's one-time funding for the teacher evaluation. And thank you, Senator Claussen, for addressing that last year.
And Senator Nelson, we do have a delete all A5 author's amendment. And Senator Kiffmeyer moves the A5 author's amendment. With your permission, we'll add that then. All in favor indicate aye.
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 We have Senate File 1482 as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for moving that amendment.
We have it?
And
yes.
So the this bill, 1482, just makes permanent then that one-time funding for teacher evaluation. And I'll describe a few more specifics of the bill, but I'll let Superintendent Munoz tell you just a bit about teacher evaluation in the Rochester School District.
Well, good morning again, and thank you. As Senator Nelson said, you know, all the research tells you that the number one factor for student achievement is the classroom teacher. So it's extremely important that we do, as districts try to build the capacity of our teachers ongoing. We were pretty fortunate that we were one of nine districts across the U.S. that was chosen by the U.S. Department of Education to pilot a teacher evaluation. And so we just finished that last year and adopted that as our evaluation for this current school year. Part of that evaluation is really designed to give teachers feedback and specific feedback on how they can improve their instruction. And we have had veteran teachers, teachers that have been teaching 10, 20 years, tell us that this is the best evaluation or feedback they've received in their entire career. So we're really extremely happy with the process. It involves the administration doing observations in the classroom and also peers observing each other's classrooms, providing feedback to the teacher. We did apply for QComp. But did not receive that to help us cover the cost of this evaluation. It did require us to add additional administrators at the secondary level and an initial administrator at our larger elementaries in order to do this type of evaluation effectively. But as I said, we do believe it has provided good feedback for our teachers, and we believe it's going to build the capacity of our classroom teachers and feel it's extremely important.
Thank you, Superintendent. Ms. Gilbert.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools, and I am here as well to support any step forward as it relates to districts that don't have a QCOM plan that are implementing a robust teacher evaluation system. The St. Paul Public Schools has a peer assistance and review program in place for probationary teachers and also is adding, as required, a tenure teacher. And on when we took a look at what we were actually spending, we spend about $2,600 per licensed teacher for our teacher evaluation system. And so we were thankful last year for the one-time money. We're very grateful the committee is talking about some equity between the QComp and the non-QComp districts as far as teacher evaluation. So we support this as a step forward. And I just also want to say in advance that we totally support Senator Stump's bill that is scheduled on Thursday as well that would actually provide that equity across all districts for teacher evaluation.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. Is there anyone else that would like to address Senate File 1482 as amended? Ms. Kelleher. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. And we are also here to support this bill. This is a big process for us. We're all doing teacher evaluation this year. So ongoing dollars to fund that so we can get a quality process would be very beneficial. So we're thrilled with this. I'm just thrilled the committee's ready to talk about it because it was one of the things that school districts were asked to do with really very little financial support. And as we put it together, we envisioned it to have a much more substance and better funding. So this would be very beneficial to help those roll out and continue to have the quality we're looking for. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Further comments, questions? Senator Pratt.
Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if maybe I should do a bill walkthrough first, if that would answer some of those questions. Or it's pretty straightforward.
I believe
that's
it's
okay.
Straightforward.
All right.
So, but we appreciate that offer. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Nelson, just wondering, I assume you have a fiscal note being drafted for this. Do you have any estimate of the cost?
Mr. Chair? Senator Pratt. Yes, we do. And based upon the one-time funding from last year, we can anticipate that it's about a $10 million cost. And I'm sure that fiscal note will be somewhere in that range.
Thank you.
Mr. Winkler.
Yes, Mr. Winkler, from Paul Winkler from Education Minnesota, and we're just here to support this bill, getting a little more equity for our non-QComp districts across the state, especially in rural Minnesota, where they're doing this teacher development and evaluation essentially with no money this year. So we appreciate these efforts. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Dames.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Nelson. On the amendment, I see that you've included the educational co-ops and education districts, and I'd really like to thank you for that. I think that that's very, very important that they be included. And also, I support the bill and appreciate your bringing this forward.
We have momentum. Mr. Lundell.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell from Schools for Equity and Education, just like to echo the many comments that have come forward. This is one of the gaps that is existing between districts and those who are in the alternative compensation and those who aren't. And we really do appreciate this bill, Senator Stump's work as well, and look forward to working with the committee moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further testifiers? If not, Senator Weber moves that Senate File 1482 as amended be recommended for possible inclusion in the E-12 omnibus bill. Further discussion? If not, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Carried. Thank you,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Superintendent. Thank you, Senator Nelson. We have next Senate File 1750, Senator Hayden, and we ask that you have your testifier join you. Welcome, Senator Hayden.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's so good to see you on a wonderful morning to talk about education. Mr. Chair, members, I have Senate File 1750. 1750 was introduced in part to honor the work and the life of Matthew Little. For a brief background, Matthew Little was a trailblazing civil rights icon. Mr. Little helped to bring about desegregation in the Minneapolis Fire Department. In 1963, he led the Minnesota delegation that went to Washington, D.C. to hear Dr. Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. But above all, Mr. Little strongly believed that education should be a pathway to prosperity. His daughter, Titi Lau Bidiaco, has followed in those footsteps and has founded the We Win Institute. I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Bidiaco, who will further discuss the merits of this bill.
Thanks, Senator Hayden, and welcome, Ms. Bidiaco.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm asking you this morning to please support Bill 1750. Matthew Little came to Minnesota in the late 40s, where blacks and whites were segregated. Opportunities for African Americans were limited, and hope for many blacks were slim. His position was to create a kind of Minnesota he wanted to see. When he was not allowed to be a firefighter because of the color of his skin, he helped to desegregate the Minneapolis Fire Department. The segregation of schools were not acceptable to him, so he initiated a lawsuit that desegregated the Minneapolis public schools. For 60 years, not only did he write about injustices, but he offered and implemented solutions. The projects in North Minneapolis were deplorable to him, so he initiated a lawsuit that desegregated housing for North Minneapolis, which is now Legacy Village. In his spare time, he raised 6 children, was president of the Minneapolis NAACP, and mentored leaders such as Senator Amy Klobuchar, Congressman Keith Ellison, and our very own Jeff Hayden. Everything that my father stood for was excellent. The W. Matthew Little Culture on Educational Excellence Center will be a fitting tribute to a man that has given so much to Minnesota. With only 35% of black students graduating from high school, which is the worst gap in the country, we need this center to inspire, educate, and give our marginalized youth a can-do attitude. We Win Institute is the organization to make this happen. For the last 19 years, we have made a difference in the academic and social success of marginalized youth through literacy, mentoring, and educational activities. We Win Institute helps children create academic and social success. They learn leadership skills, serve their community, and we support parents through tools that gives them effective advocacy for their children. For the last two decades, we have served over 5,000 students, helped increase reading rates, grade point averages, and assisted thousands of youth graduate from high school. Let us honor Matthew Little while simultaneously making sure that the academic and social gap that exists in our state becomes a thing of the past.
Thank you very much.
And Mr. Chair, I have Luann Yerkes, who's the chairman of the board at We Win Institute.
Welcome.
Chairman and members, I just wanted to say that I've personally been involved in We Win Institute for many, many years, and I'm currently the board chair, and I've witnessed the excellent results and the experiences that the children at We Win have and how they have taken that and made success. I think that's it.
Good. And Mr. Chair, to the bill, what we're asking for is an appropriation for a planning grant to take the We Win Institute and morph it, if you will, into the Matthew Little Center of Excellence so that we can serve more children and develop the capacity not only for our children, obviously in this committee, education and academics is important, but also insert culture and ensure that we have highly qualified, smart, and effective young people in our community.
Thank you, Senator Hayden, and testifiers. Questions from the committee? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hayden, it's an interesting plan. One of my questions would be, how do you plan to measure the success of the program?
Mr. Chair and Senator Pratt, I think that is a great question. As we've developed the bill, and you know, this is kind of an ongoing basis, I would imagine that the work, and we've done this before, the work that we would do with the Minnesota Department of Education really requires, when you contract, it really requires those reporting requirements. We can kind of add that to the bill for comfort, and I'm more than willing, but I know that as we start to, if this bill were to go forward and the money would be appropriated, that we work with, that We Win Institute, Matthew Little Institute, would really work closely with the Department of Education to track that.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Hayden. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Hayden, I have a bill that hopefully will be heard in this committee that does a pilot of the program called Girls in Action. I think you're a co-author on that bill. I wonder if your testifiers are aware of that program and partner in any way with that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll let Ms. Bediaco, we are familiar with it, and she does collaborate with them, but I'll let her expound.
Yes, they do incredible work, and we have a program called Women of Distinction, and we interact in terms of each other's programs, and both are very worthy programs.
Thank you.
And, Senator Bonoff, that will be heard April 9.
Oh, good. Thanks.
Good. Additional questions. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address Senate File 1750? Very good. And if there could be the follow-up per Senator Pratt's suggestion, just on evaluation as this would come through the Department of Education, we'll ask for that. I'd like to add for the record, I knew Matt Little. He was a constituent in Maplewood for many years, and it's great that his legacy continues. So, there being no further discussion, Senator Jensen moves that Senate File 1750 be recommended for possible inclusion in the E-12 omnibus bill. Further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Senator Hayden, and to testifiers. Next, Senate File 441, Senator Jensen, followed by Senate Files 1031, 676, and 488. And we invite Senator Jensen's testifiers to join her at the table.
Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
Senate File 441 proposes to provide an increase in community education for after-school enrichment programs. These programs provide youth development, including after-school enrichment, youth service, and youth leadership opportunities, including art, music, literacy, technology, education, STEM, and so much more. They also do service and leadership, serving in the school and in their surrounding communities, trying to understand and applying the leadership skills that they're learning. The funding for these programs is done primarily through local levy at $1.85 times the greater of 1,300, or the population of the district not to exceed 10,000. Well, what we want to do is, this has not been changed, we want to make it $2.37. And then for over 10,000, it's 43 cents. We want to make that 55 cents. We think this is a reasonable request and actually just covers the, if we would have been getting money for inflationary throughout that the time since it's been put in. So community education youth programs, what they do is they support positive youth development, provide a delivery system statewide, provide access to enrichment, recreation, and service learning opportunities. They support learning and school success for children from kindergarten all the way through 12th grade. The kids that are exposed to these kinds of activities do better in school, they maintain their health, and create networks that assist them when they become productive adults. They promote positive youth development, including choice making, pursuing knowledge and skills in an area that they're interested in. They provide asset development for school-age youth through service opportunities like I talked about. So I can tell you the number of kids that have participated, but instead I've brought some people with that can tell you for themselves how these programs work and the impact that they've had on themselves. So first I would like to introduce Terry Johnson. She's from Maplewood North St. Paul Community Education.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is, as Senator said, is Terry Johnson, Director of Community Education for the North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale Schools. This after-school enrichment levy provides the capacity for community education to offer after-school release day and summer programs. As you know, community education is the statewide delivery system, so funding this bill provides resources for every community in the state. This bill allows school boards to make a local decision to levy for these programs. Today, I'd like to remind you why these programs are important, share a story about impact, and let you know why more funding is needed. The research is clear that there are many important outcomes for children engaged in these programs. First, positive school outcomes. Children are more engaged in school, have higher school attendance, and higher achievement. We know that a significant contributor to the achievement gap is the opportunity gap. Summer is a prime example of this, with research showing that children who are living in poverty lose ground over the summer, while children engaged in enriching activities gain ground over the summer, thus widening the achievement gap. Second, with positive youth development, children have better emotional adjustment and connection to school and community, more positive self-perceptions and social behaviors. Third, reduce risk-taking behavior. Because programs are offered during times when parents are often not at home, children engage less in drug, alcohol, sexual risk-taking, as well as other negative behaviors. Here's what an elementary ESL teacher told me about the impact that these programs have on her children who are learning English. Muriel told me enrichment programs give her kids hope. Why? Because many of the children that she's working with are coming from homes without many resources, where there isn't much to do, and parents are working, so they aren't available at home. Muriel told me that these kids love school and sometimes can dread those breaks from school. The children may be struggling with success in reading or math,
And participating in an enrichment program provides an opportunity for a student to shine in an area of strength, such as music, art, or sports. This teacher described the impact on the school day. She said, "Hope translates into effort. Effort translates into doing better in school." A principal in a school where cross-age mentoring after school said that these opportunities change the way her kids walk into school each day. She said the impact of having a positive high school role model who looks like the students and comes from a similar background is huge. It gives them a sense of possible. This levy has been in place since 2003 without increase. Inflation has eroded the ability for community education to support programs, and the number of families who are unable to pay for these programs has increased significantly. The demographics in District 622 have changed dramatically in the last 10 years. The percentage of students who qualify for free and reduced lunch has almost doubled from 26.2 to 51%, with several of our schools having between 64 and 72%. The number of scholarships we've given for enrichment programs has increased sixfold in just the last 5 years, and we are not close to meeting the need. We do a good job with what we have, partnering with others to really try to leverage resources. Additional funding would allow us to provide access to children who can benefit most from these enriching opportunities. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Chair, committee members, thank you for letting me testify in support of Senate File 441. My name is Anne Marie Leland, and I'm the Community Education Director for Faribault Public Schools. Faribault, too, has a diverse community, both ethnically and socioeconomically. Faribault Public Schools serves approximately 3,800 K-12 students. 15% of those are Black, mainly refugees from Somalia, 22% Hispanic, and a little over 60% white. Our percentages of families that qualify for free or reduced price lunch is upwards of 75% in our elementary buildings and slightly less in our middle and high school. We have the highest number of Somali refugees outside of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Our achievement and education gaps are significant, and along with the limited access to enrichment opportunities, such as summer camps and family trips outside of Faribault, call for us to provide quality after-school extended learning programming if we are to help shrink these gaps. In order to meet the academic and social-emotional needs of our students, community education, along with many internal school district and our external community partners, are able to offer after-school programming 1st through 12th grade. One of our hallmark programs that was funded in part by our 2013 successful school levy is called Summer STEAM. STEAM standing for Science, Technology, Engineering, Art, and Math. Yes, we snuck that in there. This program is offered to students going into grades 1st through 8th who primarily qualify for targeted services. Targeted services has a long list of criteria, but is mainly focused on students of low income, English learners, and are academically low performing. STEAM is offered for 6 weeks in the summer, over 24 days, 6.5 hours a day, Monday through Thursday. It provides free breakfast, lunch, and transportation. Last summer, we enrolled 350 students, and this year we are striving for 400 to 450 students. The academic and enrichment opportunities are intense and are formed around a weekly STEAM theme, such as making machines, energize, or extreme chemistry. Intensive science, math, and reading are offered in the morning, and hands-on science, art, and music projects, fitness, digital citizenry, and cabin time, which is a chance to discuss important topics such as team building, collaboration, civic duty, and other social-emotional areas are provided in the afternoon. And the preliminary standardized test data is showing that we are making a difference academically for the students who attend Summer STEAM. But no matter how great Summer STEAM is and how lucky we were to have some levy funds from the community, funding these kinds of quality experiences is challenging. Community education needs the funding to provide consistent after-school program opportunities, not programs that are here today and gone tomorrow. Community educators will always try and leverage as many partnerships and funds as possible. That's what we do, and that's who we are. But with growing diversity and the achievement gap across the state widening, that is getting much more difficult, and for some areas in the state, nearly impossible. To shine a light on an example of the impact after-school programs have for youth, I would like to introduce Giselle Gonzalez. Giselle grew up in Faribault and attended and graduated from our high school. She was able to participate in College Ambitions Start Today, PAST, an after-school program that is offered to students in grades 9 through 12 and is funded in part by Community Ed, Integrated District, and Carleton College. Here she is.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for having us here today. My name is Giselle Gonzalez. I'm 20 years old, and as Anne-Marie said, I graduated in 2013 from Faribault High School. I'm currently enrolled in South Central College, seeking my associate degree in liberal arts, and I hope to continue my education and transfer next fall. While I attended high school in Faribault, I was a part of CAST. There, I got ACT preparation, I got help with college applications, writing essays for the applications, and we even got a group of junior students to take the ACT together. The support was really great for many people. In CAST, we also went on college visits, and I remember professionals coming in and talking about their careers and what a day in their jobs would look like. CAST in high school was a fun place to go after school. It was a place to be with friends, and it was a place to make new friends. So you understand a little bit of how CAST helped me. I'll tell you that English is my second language. I am not a first-generation student, but my father graduated as an industrial engineer in Mexico, so his experience with college is very different than mine. And so navigating the system, I thought I had to do it on my own, and so I was kind of lost. I didn't know where to go. And so the adults in CAST were a great help and guidance. They went above and beyond to help me navigate the system along with my parents. That is something I'm extremely grateful for. Reflecting back on what CAST did for me, I realized there was so much more than just having fun after school. In CAST, I learned to make connections with adults and peers that I could trust and that would help lead and guide me. Because of finances, I couldn't imagine myself in college, but CAST helped me visualize myself there when we went on the college visits. That was really exciting. But what I think was the biggest accomplishment in CAST was how I talked about college to others. CAST made me aspire to do great things. As I accomplished small aspirations, such as being president of Student Senate at South Central College and speaking here today, I feel like I inspire others to do what CAST inspired me to do. What I learned, the resources I received at CAST, I couldn't keep it to myself. Thank you and God bless.
Well, thank you, President Gonzalez.
Thank you, Mr.
Great
Chair.
Testimonial.
Oh, she is.
And Mr. Chair, I think she's already doing great things. Thank you for coming. But these after-school programs are about all Minnesotans. So we need to make this investment so that every youth, family, employer, school, and community can have results that we see before us today.
Great. Questions from the committee? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to address on file 441? Well, Senator Jensen, it's very well documented in terms of the need, the return on investment, and we appreciate the excellent testimony. We've had some related discussion in Senator Dahl's bill on enrichment opportunities, as well for schools, and Senator Marty of provisions for service learning, and the whole theme of providing additional opportunities to help fulfill each student's potential. So great ideas, proposals, and we ask that you make a motion for possible inclusion.
I move that Senate File 441 be recommended to pass and considered for inclusion in families.
Yeah, and I think the recommended to pass, we would, it would be to be for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay.
On that motion, further discussion? Not
right.
All in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Aye. Carried. Thank you. Great job. Next, we have Senate File 1031, Senator Weber, and we ask that you invite your testifiers. You have several, but pull up as many chairs as we can. We welcome all of you. You came from different parts of the state to be here. So,
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased to bring to you Senate File 1031 this morning, which is the result of a series of public meetings, the final one being on the Tuesday before Thanksgiving of last fall. And I would like to thank you, Chairman Wieger, for being in attendance at Laverne that day. Also, Senator Dames for being involved. We had a meeting of over 70 people in Laverne that consisted of people from our high schools, from the cooperative, from MNSCU, from industry, from our local community economic development committees, talking about the vocational career training needs that our area has. And the bill, as you see it today, has been developed with the cooperation of the Southwest West Central Service Cooperative, and our first testifier today is Cliff Carmody, the Executive Director, and I'm pleased to turn it over to him at this point.
Thank you, Senator Weber, and welcome, Mr. Carmody.
Thank you. Good morning. As is indicated, my name is Cliff Carmody. I'm the Executive Director at Southwest West Central Service Cooperative. Southwest West Central Service Cooperative is a public agency that provides a comprehensive range of educational administrative programs and services to our members. Membership is available to schools, cities, counties, and other governmental agencies. We serve 18 counties in southwest and west central Minnesota, covering 12,500 square miles and a total population of nearly 279,000 people. Four of our counties rank in the top 10 for agricultural production in Minnesota. We serve 56 public school districts, 19 non-public and charter schools, and 119 cities, counties, and other governmental agencies. The schools we serve employ over 7,500 teachers and enroll over 50,000 students. The largest school district in our region is Wilmer, with an enrollment of just over 4,000 students. We serve small and rural school districts. Southwest West Central Service Cooperative has been a longstanding partner with our schools and a catalyst for innovative approaches to addressing the challenges our members face in the delivery of their educational programs. We receive no direct state or federal appropriation for the programs and services we provide our members. Our programs are voluntary, and our members participate by allocating federal, state, and local revenues they receive to pay for the programs and services they choose to participate in. Minnesota Statute 123A.21 provides that the primary purpose of service cooperatives shall be to perform planning on a regional basis and to assist meeting specific needs of participating governmental units, which could be better provided by a service cooperative than by members themselves. This bill, Senate File 1031, does just that. It is grounded in collaboration, emphasizes the need for public-private partnerships, addresses a significant workforce challenge in our region, and meets the primary purpose defined in statute for service cooperatives in Minnesota. Thank you, and I encourage your support for this bill.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Roger Moe, and I'm here on behalf of the service cooperative, the Southwest West Central, as well as the Minnesota Service Co-ops. I want to thank you for the renewed emphasis or increased emphasis on career and technical education. I think that's terribly important. You basically are attempting to change, my observation anyway, is you're attempting to change a culture, and culture change takes time. I can speak from experience since I sat at the table with some of you. The post-secondary emphasis in recent years has been primarily on four-year degrees with a de-emphasis on career and technical education. And so I'm thanking you for bringing greater attention to career and technical education because, as we know, there's significant jobs and good middle-income jobs in that area. So I'm here to speak on behalf of Senator Weber's bill, and I thank you for inviting me as well. Southwest West Central Service Cooperative, the service co-ops have been in existence now for almost 40 years. They've been doing shared services for that long. They have saved the taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars by a variety of programs where they work together, and this is consistent with that effort. So I want to encourage the committee to look serious at this. I sincerely apologize to my friend Senator Stumpf, my senator, by the way, Senator Stumpf,
for not bringing my prop along. And my prop was going to be the Northern Watch. Now, only Senator Stumpf and I know what the Northern Watch is. It's a regional newspaper that comes out of Thief River Falls. And I follow that. It's a weekly newspaper. And every week I look at it, and I look at the want ads. And it's head up to 3.5 pages of want ads for jobs in the northwest part of the state. That's a big deal. But if you look at those ads, once in a while, it would require a four-year degree. Maybe there's an administrator at one of the colleges or the head of nursing services, but practically every job there requires some kind of career, technical education, some kind of training in practically any area that you want to pick. I wished I was trained in welding because I'd have a job right away. There are so many
and
welding jobs and others. So I apologize for not bringing my prop, Senator Stumpf, and holding it up. So thank you very much.
Senator Stumpf, is he excused on that?
Yes, he is. Mr. Chairman, I had the privilege of serving with Senator Moll for quite a few years, and he did a wonderful job being majority leader, I think the longest majority leader, tenure of a majority leader in the history of the state. So he's done a great job.
No, thank you, Senator Stumpf and Senator Moll, and we'll open it up following the remainder of the testimony. Next.
Chairman Wieger and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify today. I am Wayne Wormstead, Superintendent of Wyndham Public Schools in southwestern Minnesota. Wyndham's a community of 4,600 residents and a little over 1,000 students, fairly small school. We can spend a lot of time talking about how few CTE programs are available or how we're losing these opportunities for students. But I prefer to talk about what are the possibilities for our future. How are we building the future workforce and opportunity for good jobs throughout the state of Minnesota? At Wyndham, it means small victories for our students. Over the past few years, there's been a large demand for welders between the communities of Wyndham, Mount Lake, and Jackson. This past spring, we were able to write and receive a small REMIC Foundation grant to upgrade our welders in our school. At the same time, Toro was modernizing and expanding their welding area in Wyndham. We partnered with Toro to update our welding area through in-kind labor, cash, and our grant. In return for doing this, they used our facility to train their new additional workers to Toro on their second shift. It was a win-win for both. Now we are working with another area business to train their welders during second shift in our facility and update and maintain our equipment. Also, this second semester, the Alternative Learning High School, which is sponsored by the Southwest Service Co-op that Cliff Carmody just spoke about, is now taking their Alternative Learning High School and taking a class at our facility on welding to meet the needs and job market of our area. Our grant also provided for new laptops for teaching CAD. Then this winter, we received another small grant from the Southwest Initiative Foundation through STEM projects to put in 3D printers. I'm stressing these small victories of student opportunity and support for our local workforce through collaboration. We wouldn't be able to do this ourselves. Through grants, Toro, other area businesses, we're making small wins for students. We're only reaching a few students and benefiting a small community of employers right now. CT is a large capital investment that few districts can afford alone. What this legislation proposes is moving forward a model that creates partnerships benefiting students and employers, large and small, regionally. This bill allows for area districts within the Southwest West Central Cooperative to work together within business and communities and for other areas of the state to replicate this. Our district cannot afford to build a robust program ourselves, but we can do this through shared efforts between school districts, service cooperatives, and businesses. I ask that you support this pilot effort to build CT and future success for all students throughout Minnesota. Thank you for your time, and I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for the opportunity to testify on what I think is a very important subject. I represent 3M. My name is Tom Mayer. I am within the Plant Engineering Global Excellence Group. My role within that organization is to drive health into our organization, both at our equipment standpoint as well as our human capital. 3M continues to advance our manufacturing operations in the global market. What comes with that is the ability, the need to equip those facilities with very talented people. Beginning in 2013, 3M sponsored a pilot program here in Minnesota that is a partnership between the technical colleges and regional schools in the areas that we have plants. Those four pilot areas were Hutchinson, Alexandria, New Ulm, and Fairmont. 3M Foundation has contributed about $250,000 to start that initiative. I'm very happy to say we are also looking at driving that that program on a national basis. I am working with Springfield, Missouri currently, as well as Watertown, South Dakota, both of which want to adopt a similar program, a partnership. Just to reemphasize Senator Moe's comments earlier about careers and what's needed, Harvard did some study on careers in today's economy. For every master's degree job there is out there, there are two jobs that require a four-year degree, and there are seven jobs that require some sort of technical education. That's been true for the last 30 years, and it's going to be true going forward. So it is very important that we try to drive these initiatives and partnerships. This bill would support industry-driven partnerships to align the curriculum of our local schools in order to prepare those students for those really critical jobs. Jobs that not only pay well, but also provide an alternative to the traditional four-year career path. Thank you.
Thank you, and for the company's leadership on this.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Christopher Ellingson. I work for the Schwann Food Company. I'm the human resources manager for all of the manufacturing facilities in Southwest Minnesota. We're seeing a lack of qualified labor force in our area, leading to some key shortages. Several of the key shortages that we're seeing currently are those that are educated and able to repair electronic touchscreen type robots, and as well as mechanical maintenance. So we are seeking to partner with just about anybody in Southwest Minnesota who is able to bridge the gaps between the high school, the technical schools, and employers to be able to begin to shape that labor force that we're going to need in the future. As we take a look at the demographics of the region, we're going to see this problem becoming more acute as the population of the baby boomers tend to start to exit the labor force. And with the enrollment in technical colleges and institutions in the area declining, we are going to be caught fairly short in the very near future and extremely short in the distant future.
Thank you very much for those leadership efforts. I sense a lot of agreement here just in terms of the need and putting it together with the public, the private sector. And I know a couple of members would like to offer some comments. But first I wanted to thank you, Senator Weber, Senator Dames, for inviting me to the community meeting that day on a large gathering, helping lay foundation continued momentum for this proposal. And well done. I'll ask Senator Stumpf and then Senator Bonhoff, and we'll continue. Okay. Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is really identifying a big need out there across a lot of the rural areas, and we noticed it last year when the bonding committee went around the state. There's so many employers that were in need of trained, skilled employees, and it was very, very evident, and along with skilled employees, obviously, many of those communities needed housing to try to attract people to their communities. But I have three points I'd like to just ask your input or consideration. One is that it seems like the effort that you're making is one that really should be coordinated not just with the school district, but it really should be with the technical colleges or MNSCU as well, because quite often they should have some programs, and I know right now there's a shortage of even programs to address some of those needs. I mean, like you're talking about manufacturing processing, the Technical College in Staples has a very good program there. But that means somebody from southwestern Minnesota might have to go up to Staples, go through their program, and then go back into your community. So we may have to get the Minscu system multiply those programs if they can. The other second point is that it seems like to make the program successful, there should be some kind of a matching component where people or industry, along with the public sector, contributes so that they're all sides or all parties have some skin in the game. And I think that's important as well. And we're finding out that when you do that, there's a lot longer term commitment. So I think when I look at your the items that you're thinking about funding, I would say that would be something that you maybe should consider. And the last point is that one that is really a question to you, and that's when you look at your point number 3 on clause 3 on page 1, and you're dealing with the Office of Career and Technical Education, how do you see you're addressing that third point, which is increase family and student awareness of the availability and benefits of career and technical education courses and training opportunities? How are you going to do that?
Okay, a few questions there, and how are you'd like to respond?
Okay, at this point, I just wanted to comment. I think that, Mr. Chairman and Senator Stumpf, in the provisions on the first page, it talks about increasing the coordination of high school and post-secondary program options. And I think we have the cooperative as well as our secondary schools have developed good relationships with Minscu in our area, and I think there are a variety of opportunities to which that is available. And at this point, I know Mr. Carmody has some comments as it relates to his plan going forward.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, thank you for your insights and your leadership around career technical education. I think you're right on. This bill intentionally allows for some flexibility. If you look at the content of the bill, we believe that, and we've been doing this a long time, we believe that our school districts find better solutions when they come up with the solutions that meet their needs. So it is a collaborative attempt. However, built into that collaboration is collaboration with higher ed. We have 3 higher ed institutions in the region. We expect that we will continue to talk with them. We have been talking with them, and so there are smaller projects that have gone on in the region with higher ed. There are examples in Hutchinson, Marshall, Laverne. You can find those examples in the region. To the question of the office that we're talking about, or that you asked about specifically, I indicated that we serve 55 public schools. We don't have the staff capacity today to help in those districts and those partnerships to be able to work together. So the intent of having those funds available to the co-op is really to address the need for hiring staff who can work with groups and collaboratives of schools in developing the programs and the projects that they want to work on. The point that you talk about in number 3, I think Senator Moe was intimating around that. We have spent at least a decade or more talking about trying to send all of our young people to a 4-year institution, almost to the extent where we've forgotten about the high-quality jobs, the high-quality careers and lifestyle that can be had through career and technical education. We believe as an underpinning of this work, we need to go back into those K-12 systems and help parents and students understand the need and the available opportunities that exist there. One of our staff who's here today, Tom Hoff, has done some surveying, and it's interesting to know that most young people, when asked where do you get advice about your career, they'll tell you they get it from their friends, which probably is not the best place to get career advice. But that's where they're getting it today. And so we think there are a number of challenges with what we're We're talking about under career technical education, but we think one of those challenges is getting back into the K-12 system and helping young people and their parents understand the opportunities that are available.
Senator Stump, follow up.
Mr. Chairman. And, you know, I was hoping that you would say that because I think, and Senator Moe, you helped me out, the former president of BSU from Erskine.
Jim
Benson was a tremendously dedicated person toward career and technical education. He was the president of Dunwoody. He was also the president of a college over in Wisconsin and then BSU in Bemidji. And he had developed or worked with an organization to develop a curriculum that went down into the elementary grades, training and helping young people understand the connection between a skill and an academic knowledge. And it was very interesting and might even be helpful for you to give Dr. Benson a call and see if you could resurrect that, because I have talked about that to different people. And if that could be woven into the school district's curriculum somehow, or even a portion of it, what it does is it stimulates these young people to be thinking about a career, or to imagine that there is something beyond just learning these facts and passing these tests, that there is a skill that they could end up having. And that's where the seeds get planted, I think, for the kind of training that we really need in the future. Thank you.
Senator Weber.
I'll turn it over to
gentleman. Mr. Chair, yes. I'd like to say that Southwest Cooperative has been instrumental in allowing my organization to get into and partner with the high school to show the young folks in our area the availability of good-paying jobs and stable careers for the future. They've also been very instrumental in us building a bridge with MinWest in the area to develop kind of a pipeline of high-potential kids coming out of high school and going through an apprenticeship-type program with us, working in our facilities during the summer in summer seasonal positions, and then moving on with the potential for tuition assistance as we move them into a secondary mechanical maintenance type associate's degree. So they've been key already, and with this position, if funded, would help bridge the gap and help us navigate through what can be often cumbersome interaction between the various organizations and their oversight.
For the tape, we just heard from Chris Ellingson from Schwann. Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for bringing this forward. And we really are trying to do all we can to create a cultural shift. And one of the things I've been working very hard on is our legislation around, it's now called Earn While You Learn, but it's really an apprenticeship approach. And so 3M has been a strong participant in that process. And hopefully we will actually pass that this session. And what that sets forward is a partnership where the businesses can apply for money and then use that money to, they would hire the students, but that money would go towards the tuition for the students for post-secondary. And they would have to be in specific jobs that the Department of Labor will have identified as having competency standards agreed upon. So really taking the traditional, you know, German model of apprenticeship and bringing that forward. So I think this is definitely something that could augment that, and I think they would work in partnership. I am concerned, like Senator Stump mentioned, around the how are we going to make sure that career and tech educators occur, because as we have already identified, the University of Minnesota has stopped even having that. And here you put grant dollars towards that, but I'm curious, who is providing that right now? Who are training our instructors? Do we have in our post-secondary system enough programs where these career tech ed instructors are being trained? So that would be a question for Senator Weber.
Senator Weber.
Thank you very much. I think, Senator Bonhoff, I think you bring up a valid point. I think probably if we look back, and I don't have as much history in this body as some of you do, but I think as we shifted that focus away from our career technical to the four-year program, we then tended to diminish what people perceived as a need for those positions. I think as we reemphasize this area, I think that we will see more people willing and ready to go in to this particular area of teaching. I think also to address a comment we made regarding Subdivision 3 here as far as the Technical Education Advisory Committee, getting our young people aware. The Rural Task Force, the Senate Rural Task Force legislation that is coming through, putting money out into our area workforce centers, actually helping them to serve as a liaison with our schools, really allows for the cooperative to develop some programs that then can work off of that and provide additional young people information to our young people to proceed. But I do believe that Mr. Chairman and Senator Bonhoff, that it does point to the importance of some of the amendments we talked about the other day, because initially, until we have that pipeline of people going through the training process in the education field, we do need to have other ways to make community experts available to our young people.
And then quick follow-up.
Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we should make sure, as the Senator Saxhog bill, which you're a co-author of, moves forward, that workforce center coordinator position, perhaps we should make sure to put language in there, giving that person the duties of reaching into the schools and making sure they do make our students aware of both this opportunity as well as the apprenticeship opportunity.
There may be others, but I have Senators Claussen, Jensen, Dames, and Pratt, and Kent, and Kiffmeyer.
Oh.
going. Okay. Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is probably a question for Superintendent Wormstead and Mr. Carmody. I'm wondering how you're leveraging Perkins funding in this whole process, because you're part of a consortium down there. I know of a number of schools, and you must have a post-secondary partner is part of that consortium, and a lot of the issues that have been brought up, I know a lot of the Perkins consortiums are working on those things as far as how do you steer people, young people, into, you know, positions of two-year degrees or licenses and so on. So I'm just wondering how the Perkins funding and the consortiums fit into this whole process you're looking at.
Our Perkins and Wyndham, our Perkins consortium funding assists us with this, but the irony of this is the only.
This is Superintendent Wormstead, for the record.
Superintendent Wormstead here. What we're seeing is we have CTE funding for our FACS program and our Ag program. The program that we're seeing the most demand for is our industrial arts, mainly welding, manufacturing, and that person happens not to be CTE certified. So we're seeing the biggest demand with our teacher that's not CTE certified providing these services and partnering with this area, which we don't receive any funding for because we don't have the CTE certification when our past teacher retired. And it is very difficult to find even an industrial arts teacher, let alone CTE certification. So looking at these areas where this person be CTE certified, we can get those credits aligned with MNSCU system for that, so kids can transition, would be a great benefit. And just to echo the PSEO option, you know, we do the PSEO education. We've gone college in the schools. We offer 12 courses, 43 credits for our students. But that's a makeshift of what's taken place through our emphasis in Minnesota was to move towards four-year programming. It's de-emphasized other areas. And our job force and work demand is not in that area in our community. It's great that we're offering that, but we need to refocus on that area. And we receive very little funding for that through our consortium to take care of that.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Where do you see the funding or how the funding works once the grant money is not available? Or how will you sustain it?
Mr. Carmody.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jensen. We envision an advisory committee framework within the region. The advisory committee framework would be made up of those folks both from K-12, post-secondary, and from business and industry. That advisory committee would be the governing body, if you will, for determining how the grants will be allocated. At this point, we would envision that there would be requests prioritized based on partnerships, based on other funding that might be available. We recognize that the funds that are being requested in this bill will not cover all of the need necessarily, but we will use that advisory committee framework. We do that in the service co-op with most everything that we do simply because we always do better when we're meeting the needs of our members versus trying to tell our members what they need. And so we would use that advisory committee framework for that.
Senator Dames.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first a comment and then a question for Mr. Carmody. The comment being I'd like to thank Mr. Mayor from 3M and Mr. Ellingson from Schwann's Foods for their testimony and their willingness to work in conjunction with this program with the Southwest and the West Central Service Co-op. But my question to Mr. Carmody would be, we have certainly heard from these two businesses that would be very interested in this program, but can you give me some idea what indications you're getting from other businesses within the cooperative structure, these 18 counties and the school districts and the VOTEC school or the two-year colleges and the four-year college that we have in this area? We do have several of our two-year programs and a four-year program. What kind of willingness are you getting from these folks as far as supporting this program and helping move it forward?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dames, maybe the best way for me to describe that would be to tell you that on October 28th of 2015, we're going to have a regional workforce development summit, if you will, in Marshall, where we will be bringing regional workforce business and industry together with K-12, with post-secondary, to talk about this very need. We also thank Mr. Ellingson and Mr. Mayor for coming and testifying today. I think it's suffice it to say we could have had easily more folks that would come from business and industry. They recognize the need. I think to Senator Bonhoeff's comments about licensure, there are a lot of challenges related to a career in technical education, and it's almost a chicken-egg thing. Do you create the instructors or do you create the programs? And so we are supportive of all of the efforts in creating opportunities and increased access for our students in rural school districts to be able to access these programs. Business and industry has been engaged in conversations around the region. I sit with a group of community members from Marshall. We'll be meeting again a week from Friday to talk about some of the opportunities we're offering. So I think it's very timely, this topic, and I think it's appropriate to say the need is there.
Senator Dames?
A follow-up, Mr. Chair, and follow-up for Mr. Carmody. When you're visiting with these groups and talking to these folks, do you get the sense that the outline of this bill is going to be able to accomplish what we're trying to do here, is going to be able to accomplish what our businesses need and help them with this process?
Mr. Carmody?
Mr. Chair and Senator Dames, I think this bill is at the beginning of a committed need for providing resources for CTE. So I think it's a start. I don't think it will provide all the resources that we will need in order to significantly change the way we're educating our young people, the way we're developing our workforce, but I certainly think it's a step in the right direction for our region. And as was indicated earlier, could be an opportunity for us to find a solution that could be replicated around the state.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Weber, for bringing this forward. I think all you have to do is look out the window to see how important many of these prayers are. But the same question I asked to Senator Hayden, we talk a lot about these different programs. How do you know that this model or this program will be successful? How are you setting up your metrics, your assessment of it?
Senator Weber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator Pratt. I think one indication of an outcome would be, and I think we actually handed some of that information out to you today. If you look at some comparative information today, and that's access to programs that the K-12 students in our region have compared to some of the programs that are available to students who are in the more densely populated areas of the metropolitan area, you'll see that there are much more many more programs available to them. Even, I think we indicated one from South Dakota, I believe it was our friends from Watertown, that have access to programs. So I think one outcome would be the number of programs that our rural students have access to as we look at the evaluation of this. I also think that we could look at the number of licensed teachers that are working in our region. I think that would be another outcome that we could look at. But I think we could look to our business and industry partners in this and ask them, are they in fact seeing a greater, their needs being met? Are they seeing greater employment from folks that are looking for filling the meeting the needs of their employment?
Senator Pratt, follow up, and we have about four more minutes. And
very, very briefly. I might suggest you look at student engagement as well. One of the things that I tend to see a lot is students aren't recognizing that they're interested in these types of fields until they're a year or so out of high school. I've already helped two students get jobs that their path was planned for them, that they were going to a four-year institution. And so I'd like to see something on student engagement and some success assessment around that as well.
That's noted. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Weber, thank you for this bill. And I think this is clearly something we've all been talking about is such a big need, and I appreciate it and I'm very supportive of it. Sort of piggybacking off of what Senator Pratt and Mr. Carmody had talked about, I was thinking along the same lines. You know, you guys are embarking on a really great idea here, but I'm concerned that we're starting to get really fragmented with a lot of these great ideas, and how do we make sure that we're bringing the best of our learning from all these initiatives that are being tried so that they can be potentially replicated throughout the state, because we know this is not an issue that is limited to the Southwest and West Central region. So I would ask Senator Weber if you would be willing to integrate, for example, some of the measures that Mr. Carmody and Senator Pratt have just outlined, you know, the number of programs, licensed teachers, student engagement type metrics, in some sort of reporting mechanism that could be included as a part of this. So as this goes through this process, that we make sure we're capturing this data and that it can be shared more broadly. And I would also ask, you know, is there a role here, since you'll be working with the Department of Education, for their regional centers of excellence, which are designed for a lot of that sharing of best practices?
Senator Weber.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kent, certainly I'm willing to incorporate. There's been a lot of good suggestions here today, and you're right. We don't want this just to be a success for Southwest, West Central Minnesota. This needs to be a success for all of Minnesota. And so I think we can easily incorporate those elements into this, and I'll certainly let Mr. Carmody expand further on that if he chooses to.
And Senator Kiffmeyer, and then we're going to be acting on the bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Real quick. Number one is, why choose this method of the cooperative versus money directly to the high schools and then let them kind of work it out together? That's one. The other one is, I noticed your funding was for some equipment. And one of the things, Senator Stump, when we were touring around, we noted there was a lot of cooperation with industry donating equipment, because that was their need. They needed the students to be trained on that equipment. So they often had some tax benefits by donating equipment, shared equipment. I like the idea of the mobile lab. So have you considered, especially on that equipment issue, I haven't heard that covered yet, and then also why doing it this way instead of just directly to the schools?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kiffmeyer, I think one of the reasons that we're looking, going through the cooperatives is the fact that, number one, they have a tremendous relationship with all the school districts in our region. They have got experience in dealing with all these school districts, and also as so many times previously held vocational programs were allowed and basically had to, out of necessity, disappear. It makes it difficult for individual school districts to bring that about again. And this provides an element that they can collaboratively do this once more. Also, as we look at, Superintendent Worms, I almost elevated you to Senator there, Superintendent, or demoted you, whichever case you want to look at. Superintendent Wormstead talked about the program they have with Toro. We do have industry that is willing and has proven their willingness to participate in providing
lighting equipment and this type of thing. And I look at this grant money that would come through the cooperative being probably multiplied a number of times as we use it to reach out further to industry. I think we've had some big players at the table today in terms of industry with 3M and Schwan Foods, and yet we have many, many smaller local businesses that are there also having needs and I think are willing to participate. We had at our meeting, we had a car dealer, a truck company, our local healthcare facilities and nursing homes all have a vested interest in producing more workers in our area. And Mr. Chairman, while I have the opportunity, I'd like to thank all of my witnesses for coming here today. I think you see the mix of education, of industry, a former legislator who, looking back, reflecting back, realizes that maybe some of the changes that happened some years ago went too far and that we need to bring back balance into the education of our young people. And with that, unless there's someone else that has a comment or question, I would be willing to move Senate File 1031 for a possible inclusion into the E-12 omnibus bill.
On that motion, and noted earlier, it was comments, suggestions, guidance, and which you'll take into consideration yes. as this progresses. Further discussion? If not, all in favor indicate aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Chairman, members,
Senator
thank
Weber,
you.
Witnesses. We have two remaining bills, Senator Dahl, 676, and we would ask your testifiers to join you at the table, and that'll be followed by Senate File 488. And Senate File 676 has an A1 amendment, which should be in our packet, and Senator Dahl, if you'd like to move the author's amendment so the bill is in the form you would like.
Yes, Chair, move the A1 amendment.
On that motion, all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We have Senate File 676 as amended. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I have a couple of charter schools in my district. Used to have four before redistricting, but as we look at the bill and we can see that the general education revenue in terms of what charter schools can do, there's the first sentence, general education revenue must be paid to a charter school as though it were a district, and they get all kinds of other funding sources, declining enrollment, local option, basic skills, extended time, transition, transportation. And we're just adding small school revenue. As you read further along the bill, and I'm sure Mr. Piccolo will expand if you need further clarification, what we're basically doing, we know right now that 45% of traditional district schools qualify for small school revenue. And so we wondered what would 45% of charter schools look like in terms of if we also added them into the mix. And so the enrollment cutoff is about 200 students, and so that language is actually in this particular bill. I was at a fundraiser Friday night for one of my charter schools, Prairie Creek Charter School, and I was the auctioneer for the live auction, and they raised about $36,000. So the fact that our charter schools and other schools have to have fundraisers tells you that we believe that there's a problem. Anyway, one other clarification. It does mention crosswinds, only because they are funded in a different mechanism. Basically, we're looking at all of the charter schools, and because Crosswind is kind of a district that gets its own kind of special mechanism, which the amendment addressed as well, Crosswind actually doesn't qualify because they have more than 200 students. So, but in case they're close enough that in case they ever did, they would be eligible. So yeah. With that, there's also a run that talks about all of the charter schools and what they would receive under this new proposal. I think the total cost is about $1.3 million if we included them. So I'll start off with Eugene Piccolo to start his testimony.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Piccolo.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Eugene Piccolo, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of Charter Schools. Thank you for the opportunity to briefly speak in support of Senate File 676, which would provide small school revenue for eligible charter schools in the same manner as small traditional districts receive this revenue. The concept of small school revenue goes back to 2000, when there was a study done by Mankato State University that looked at the cost of doing administrative costs in small institutions versus larger institutions. And basically the concept was that because small institutions have a smaller number of people to spread costs around, the cost per pupil is much higher. And so the legislature actually instituted small school revenue back in 2011, but did not include charter schools. So basically this is just to bring that into charter schools. As I've mentioned, about 45% of the school districts get it, and 45% of charter schools. The average charter school is about 300 students this year. So this is the smaller schools. And we have three small schools here today to kind of talk about there. We have Jody Danzenberg from Ridgeway Community School, which is a small rural school south and west of Winona, Minnesota. We have Ryan Kraminga from Arcadia School in Northfield, and Megan Calavier from Ridge River's Edge Academy in St. Paul here. All of them are small schools for different reasons, and they can talk about how this all would affect them.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to each of you. Please state your name for the record.
Sure. My name is Dr. Meg Cavalier. I'm the Executive Director of River's Edge Academy. River's Edge Academy is an environmental charter school on the west side of St. Paul. We currently serve up to 100 students. We are focused on character and leadership development, as well as preparing students for post-secondary education opportunities. 100% of our graduates are accepted into post-secondary education opportunities, and that was a purpose of founding our school. Our school was founded by a retired superintendent who wanted to create a small school to provide meaningful opportunities for students. And this was based on research done by the Gates Foundation, bringing to light the impact of relationships in small schools and small class sizes. As a small school, River's Edge Academy simply doesn't have the economy of scale to provide meaningful services for students, including social workers, counselors, and other resources. This is an issue that the board of directors and the staff consistently face. Supporting this bill would support providing services to these students who have chosen to come to a public charter school district that they would otherwise have in traditional districts. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jody Danzenberg. I'm the school coordinator or director of Ridgeway Community School. We're located in the Winona School District in the southern part of the district, about halfway between the city of Winona and the city of Houston in an unincorporated rural village of Ridgeway, Minnesota. We have a K-5 educational program. We've been in existence since 2001, serving our rural community. Our goal is to build successful citizens in providing them a diverse, well-rounded, multi-age education. Our focus is on community and community building, community enrichment, and wellness. And we really work on building resiliency in our students and see them go on to be successful in many, many fields, agriculture, the trades, and in higher education. We are strongly supported by our rural community. We have grown our student population from just under 50 students when we opened our doors in 2001 to 93 students this year. We have accomplished three major building project renovations with the assistance of over $1 million in donations and grants, and lots of volunteer hours from our community. In return, we support our community with free community library time, opening our library up to community after hours 2 days a week. We provide opportunities for adult fitness and wellness and enrichment opportunities for after-school programming for our own students and our community members that may not attend our school. We wear a lot of hats as a small school and work diligently to bring in any resources we can to help support the needs of our students. We are an ADSIS school and a QCOM school, and in 2014, we're recognized as a celebration school by the Department of Education. This money that the bill would support would be a tremendous assistance to us to help us support, as was stated earlier, counseling and social service work with our students. We have no resources for that at present. It would also help us support the increasing demands of administrative times and efforts to keep up with required state and national reporting, supporting our computer systems so that we can manage mandated state testing and district testing. All of the costs to support a quality education program. We have a very conservative compensation program for our staff, and as a result have maintained a good financial standing. But in order to continue to serve our community long term, we need to be able to attract and retain qualified staff people, support staff, teachers, educators, and leaders. And this bill would do a great deal to help us with that. Although it would be a relatively small amount of money for us, it would make a huge difference in our ability to serve our students and our community.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Ryan Kraminga from Northfield. He's on spring break this week, so I really appreciate him coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to come and talk with you today. My name is Ryan Kraminga. I'm the director of Arcadia Charter School. We're a middle school and high school program serving 120 students in Northfield. It's Arcadia's mission to prepare students for the 21st century workforce. We want to give them the skills to explore, create, and be active members of society. We are committed to educating children who have the capacity to think critically and develop habits of mind that will equip them to be lifelong learners and well-prepared citizens. As a small school, we are very resourceful. We do a lot of fundraising. We are careful stewards of the funding that we do receive. Increasingly, the costs of meeting all of those educational needs in a small school see us struggling to focus on our mission. Funding for mandates continue to increase. Mandates like World's Best Workforce, school funding, technology needs, things like having a social worker on staff, having a nurse on staff, all of these are important for children and important in their education, but place a demand on small school budgets. Small school budgets don't have the buying power that a larger organization may have. With additional funding from this bill, Arcadia would look to about $22,000, between $22,000 and $23,000. We would see this funding as funding towards technology initiatives, including increasing infrastructure for continued online testing and some of those required mandates, reducing that student-to-teacher ratio so that we have more options for students for individualized learning for students. Thank you for your time in supporting small charter schools.
Thank you, and for sharing a part of your spring break at the state capitol. Okay. I know Senator Kent has a question, and as she prepares that, if anyone would like to testify in the audience, I'd ask that you please come forward as well. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a couple of very quick little factual questions, if I can, and then sort of a bigger question.
Yes.
And this should be pretty quick. Senator Dahl, do you know what the current enrollment is for Crosswinds off the top of your head or handy?
Mr. Chair, and I think it was just over 220 okay. or something.
Okay.
Bjorn, no, I'm sorry.
Mr. Arneson, I think it may be on this chart.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Senator Kent, if you look on page 4 of the run, Crosswinds is number 1001. And for fiscal 16, they have 221 adjusted pupil units, which would be above the 200 pupil unit threshold for qualifying for the revenue.
Thank you. And the reason I ask is, and I'm just not sure I understand why Crosswinds fits into this. For one thing, you know, we were told that the reasons Crosswinds enrollment had dipped over recent years was because there had been so much uncertainty about their future, and therefore it should be bouncing back. And so I'm just curious about how that would fit into it. And then I also am curious, given that we fund PERPICH, how this all interacts. So I don't know if that's a question for Senator Dahl or Council, but I'm
Senator Dahl, I believe you are going to weigh in there.
No, Bjorn, do you have a good answer for me? I think they drafted the bill, and okay. Crosswords wasn't necessarily my goal, but that wording came in.
Okay.
I think it's just because it's like every other type of district that gets different types of revenue. But
Mr. Arneson?
Mr. Chair and members, so you'll recall from last biennium that the sections governing Crosswinds revenue make it sort of a one-of-a-kind kind of entity. And so these questions about are districts included, are charters included in any revenue program, often now we have to ask, you know, what about Crosswinds? And so in the bill is introduced, the Crosswinds school was made potentially eligible if the Crosswinds school were at any point in the future to fall below the threshold of 200 adjusted pupil units, and the A1 amendment was purely technical to the original bill, just ensuring that Crosswinds small schools revenue was calculated based on the actual pupil count.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you. Yes, the department.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Huser, the Deputy Director of Government Relations for the Department of Education. We do have a couple of concerns with the bill. I think Senator Kent kind of hit on some of the concerns we have with Crosswinds. They are kind of their own entity, you know, treated differently in statute. And we would like to see, it was a recent change that they became part of, funded through PERPICH. We think that that should probably continue in that way. As was said, though, they don't currently, would not currently fit in this bill's model. Our second point is there is a difference between the schools that were originally intended for small schools revenue compared to charter schools. There's one, a big difference. Charter schools are small in large part because they choose to be small. The small schools revenue, when it was originally adopted, was meant for geographically isolated districts. Districts that were not easily consolidated into other districts in order to create scale. And so this aid was meant to help those types of schools who were small, kind of by no fault of their own, so to speak. And so we do have some concerns that this aid then would be flowing away from some of those schools.
Response from the author or testifiers? Ms. Piccolo.
Senator Wieger, members. If you look at the list, a majority of these schools are small charter schools are outside of the metro area, and those that are in the metro area are schools that are designed to serve primarily at-risk students.
Okay. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify? Senator Dahl, we'll entertain a motion on the provision as amended.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Senate File 676 be laid over for possible inclusion in the E-12 Education Finance Omnibus Bill.
Okay. As amended, further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried. We have one additional bill, Senate File 488. Senator Dahl, and we've had a great deal of discussion in policy. You and Senator Pratt had worked on this for the formation of an intermediate school district, but Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of Senate File 488. Yes, we did discuss allowing school districts located in Carver, Scott, and LeSueur counties to enter into agreements related to facilities instructions, forming an intermediate school district so they can share resources for special ed, career and technical education, adult basic education, alternative education, and actually, this is probably the only bill today introduced that actually saves money, I believe, in terms of the fiscal note. But, you know, as the powers and general governing structure of the new intermediate district is similar, but we're really combining all the resources into one rather than several of these districts having their own separate offering. So I'll stand for questions. I know Darren Kermes is here. If do you have any other questions? I just know that the fiscal committee wanted to hear this particular bill as well.
Right. There is a levy impact, but it's true there is a savings that's noted on the fiscal note. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to express concern or opposition Again, we did discuss this in policy at length. Mr. Lindell, were you going to approach, or are you just leaving?
Leaving.
Oh, very okay. If not, if any additional comments from the committee? That might be new from our earlier discussion and policy. Not Senator Dahl, we'll entertain a motion.
Chair, members, I'd like to move Senate File 488 be laid possible inclusion in the E-12 Finance Omnibus Bill.
Discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Adopted. Thank you, Senator Dahl. And we have completed today's agenda. Tomorrow's meeting, you'll see the various items that are listed. We also will meet Thursday. Of course, we're anxiously awaiting target information, and when we return after break, we will have at least two meetings during the week. I think there's one on April 9th, or possibly the 8th, but for sure on the 9th and the 10th. And if there is a bill that you have introduced where you have not received notice or that has been referred to us, let us know. I can't assure that you'll get a hearing for recent introductions. We're running out of time, but we're doing our absolute best to hear as many as we can. So if there's anything you'd like to share at this point, or if you want to talk to me personally, please let me know and I'll make myself available. There being no further business, the committee is adjourned.